We all want to sleep in. We all, not everyone enjoys alcohol, but a lot of people do, and sometimes too much. We want to, sit and relax. And if we do that, what happens? We become sedentary. There's alcoholism. There's, you're going to miss work. You're going to miss out on all the things that you are required to do as, even a single person, let alone married and parents, right? So it's not this like, oh, we're seeking to I'm not going out and lashing myself behind the
Right,
sheet,
right,
you know what I
right.
mean? But I am saying, all right, God, you've given me responsibilities. You've given me something to take care of, or several things to take care of, whatever that may look like. And in order to honor you, I know that I am weak. And in order to become strong to fulfill the task that you've set in front of me, I have to do difficult things.
It's not too late to diversify into gold. Physical gold was used to preserve wealth throughout history, and now is a great time to include it in your savings strategy. Birch Gold Group makes the process straightforward. They can help you convert an existing IRA or 401k into a tax-advantaged physical gold IRA without any out-of-pocket costs. Just text HOPE to 989898 to claim your free info kit on gold IRAs and protect your savings today. Special thanks to the Leo House of New York City for their support of A Ray of Hope and this podcast. Book your stay in the heart of New York City at theleohouse.com.
Jordan Burke, welcome to A Reason for Hope.
Thanks for having me. It's good to be
yeah.
here.
Yeah, yeah, brother. So I wanted to discuss your ministry, Do the Harder Thing. Considering a quote that I ran across in reading Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning some years back, in which he draws from his influence in reading the Russian philosopher Fyodor Dostoevsky. Now, disclaimer, I have not read Dostoevsky yet, but I really like this quote. It really stuck with me. And it's often attributed to Dostoevsky. However, I don't know if he actually said it as much as it is sort of just a summarization of his work and the themes in his work. But this is what Frankl quoted him as saying: "There is only one thing that I dread: not to be worthy of my sufferings."
Mm-hmm.
Really powerful. And I remember thinking that, and I was like, "Wow, I have to sit with that for a while." To even accept it as being true, if it is true. So we were corresponding via email. You said the quote was interesting, and I'm glad you had to think about it.
Yeah.
So let's have a discussion about it. I want to kind of dissect it a little bit. Perhaps it is very applicable to Catholicism. Perhaps it's not. And I'd like for you to expand upon that. But I'll tell you why I like the quote first. It's a twofold reason. Number one, I think it's true. I think to accept the quote as truth, one has to really submit themselves to utter humility, first and foremost. But it also draws to mind Christ's warning in Matthew chapter 10, I think it's verse 39, that whoever does not take up their cross and follow me is not worthy of me. So that's what comes to mind. So my first question to you is, how do you interpret the notion of being worthy of suffering from a Catholic perspective?
Yeah, this was a really difficult thing for me to wrestle with, because I keyed in on the word worthy. And when you look at our faith and you look at it, that verse is one of my favorites, and I reference it often. I struggle with the idea of being able to merit suffering. And what I mean by that is, what is Jesus saying in that verse? He's saying that you will have suffering, and you can, or essentially you can choose suffering, because you can choose to carry your cross or not carry your cross. And if you choose to not carry your cross, then you're not worthy of him, right? So you have a choice there, but the merit aspect in my mind, or the worthy aspect, is a little bit disconnected. This is my opinion, a little disconnected from the reality of the situation. So for me, there's another quote that you just reminded me of that I'm going to completely butcher. And it's it goes something along the lines of, the last thing I would ever want to do is waste my suffering. And I think that's kind of how I look at that, where suffering is an opportunity presented to us, as we know, in many different forms and facets. And my response in that, which I guess, you know, Fyodor may have been getting to, creates a type of worth. I don't know, the worthy thing. I'm working it out as we're live, obviously, but you kind of get where I'm going with that a little bit.
Yeah. It's definitely, it's like worthy of, like, what it made me think of. And again, this is my perspective, as much as I've been able to think through it, is it's almost like a more mature way of saying that I'm not worthy of God's love, you know? Which is absolutely true. I mean, you hear that in the writings of the saints all the time. I've read most of Saint Faustina's diary, which has just had a big impact on my life personally. And she's constantly saying that, like, you know, God, I'm not worthy of your love in one form or another. But I think, yeah, what I like about it is it brings about this notion, this connotation of like ultimate responsibility. And being able to just respond to reality the way it is, and take the burden of suffering, upon oneself, and to take the responsibility for the sins of ourselves and our fathers and the first man and woman on our back. And so there's sort of this opportunity to live up to the challenges that life presents, you know? That's kind of how I see it.
Yeah, you know, have you ever read Uniformity with God's Will from Alphonsus Liguori?
No, I have not.
So this is one of the fundamental texts in regards to understanding suffering, in my opinion. And what Liguori lays out basically is that everything that happens to us, everything, is either willed by God or permitted by God. Meaning that there's, as we, you know, we all know, there's a purpose behind all these things, even though in times of suffering and hardships and trials, it's very difficult to understand. And there are some that we may never understand on this side of heaven, right? But when we change our perspective shift to look at suffering and say, okay, Lord, you either desire this for me, or you're allowing this to happen to me for a greater good, because it's always for a greater reason, then we can better accept that suffering in that moment. And so maybe that's kind of what that quote was getting at, in far less words than what I just said.
But I definitely think so. How do you see suffering as a transformative force, possibly in your own life and just in general?
Yeah, so there's a few different aspects to that. One of them is understanding that we live in a fallen and broken world, and that there are going to be instances, kind of like I mentioned, that we're going to come up against, and we have to respond to those appropriately. And hopefully we respond to them with virtue, and we respond to them the way that God would call us to respond to them. But even that has facets to it, right? So for instance, you know, I've been doing therapy for years now, and you can look at an instance that you've had, or anyone's had, or I've had, where there's some traumatic experience. And you have to think, okay, well, why is this happening? Why am I experiencing anxiety? Well, you're experiencing anxiety because it's a result of something that occurred, as well as God is calling you to healing. This is why he's permitting it to happen, right? Saying this thing happened, he never will sin, but this thing happened, and I'm allowing you to feel this anxiety. Why am I permitting you to feel this anxiety? So you seek healing, so you can become whole. And in the midst of that, you gain virtue, you gain strength. And in the midst of that, hopefully the tools you learn and the tactics or the growth that you experience, you're able to pass on to other people. You know, when I started to do the harder thing, it was addressing the pornography crisis, right? And so I met with some of the greatest minds in that arena and dealt with my own struggles and developed a plan. So it's the same process. I did this terrible thing. God allowed it to happen. He also brought me healing, and so that I can help others break free. So there's always this like thing working in the background for greater good. And anyway, I don't want to ramble. Hopefully that made sense.
No, that makes complete sense. And you know, you're talking about how you said do the harder thing was in relation to healing from pornography, right?
Right.
I had told you before we started recording that I listened to your podcast with the Catholic Gentleman, and you were saying something about how one, I think it was a therapist or a friend, said that you're not addicted to pornography. You're actually just addicted to affection, right?
Yeah.
Could you comment on that? Because I found that really, really interesting.
Yeah. So, you know, there's the word addiction is thrown around a lot nowadays. And the clinical understanding of it is most guys out there and gals, unfortunately, it affects both of us. But most people are not addicted. So I just want to get that out of the way. And even when he said you're addicted to affection, he wasn't saying you're clinically addicted to affection. He was using the nomenclature to help me understand that what you are desiring and what's motivating this behavior is affection, what you think you are receiving from this thing, right? So I had a disordered view or a disordered experience where I thought that I was receiving this, or, you know, and my whole, and the pornography was just one part of it, you know, serial relationships. That's where that really came in was, no, I am seeking affection. That is what I desire, but I'm going about it the wrong way. And ultimately, you know, do the harder thing is it covers a lot of facets, but it's the dying to oneself, as I think you mentioned earlier, the mortification, the life of ascesis, that fundamental principle crosses over into all aspects of the faith, which is why I started Do the Harder Thing, because doing the more difficult thing, doing the harder thing is the fundamental aspect to growth and virtue, in my opinion.
Yeah, 100%. It reminds me of something I came across on YouTube recently. I really got my YouTube algorithm dialed in, or it has me dialed in. Yikes! I came across a video recently called "The Science of Discipline," and I was like, "Oh, let me check that out. I could always use more discipline." And the psychologist, we don't need the name, was talking about the brain structure AMCC. I forget what it stands for, but just to note, I've always found the reconciliation where applicable between science and religion really fascinating, because it goes to prove the beauty and the complexity and even sometimes the simplicity of God's creation,
and points
to the reality of God. Like I think Lewis would say that this the material, the temporal world is just like a shadow of the spiritual world in a sense. So everything sort of reflects and it points back to the spiritual realm. So anyway, the AMCC, I think there's some recent studies that they're still trying to kind of figure it out, but it's the brain structure that is recently being associated with essentially what this psychologist was calling the will to live. And so in the studies he was reading, to activate it, to enlarge that part of the brain's activity, he was talking about how one has to engage in these quote unquote micro and macro sucks, you know, like just micro things that you just don't want to do, like loading the dishwasher. Like, oh, I could get to it later, but then you power through and you do it. Or if you just go the extra 10 or the extra 100 yards at the end of your run, that could be a macro. Just do it. But so essentially, in going the extra mile without hurting yourself, you're almost willing yourself to live more instead of sort of rotting away, in essence. So I think that speaks to doing the harder thing on a physiological level in an interesting way.
You're right. It all ties in. So for instance, my dad, who you know, we were talking about that earlier.
Yeah.
He was out there with y'all. He and I both got these heart rate monitors recently because he's trying to take his health more seriously. And I've been going to the gym for a long time. He's like, hey, let's do this together. Let's do these heart rate things together. And so this morning I did the first HRV, heart rate variability training. And to your point, you know, I'm thinking, well, I never do cardio. This isn't good. Right? So I'm not looking forward to it. And I have to keep my heart rate in a particular zone. And it was extraordinarily difficult.
Like what zone? Like was it 140 or something like that?
Well, so for me, because my cardio is terrible, my zone two is like 100. It's like 160 something beats a minute.
Okay.
So you know, but it's what are you doing when you're in the midst of that? Okay, well, I'm dialing it in. All right. Well, if I set the incline to the treadmill on this level, or I need to go a little bit lower to keep it steady in that place, or I need to go to this speed to keep it steady. All of that is denying, number one, denying yourself, because I certainly don't like doing cardio, right? Which isn't good, but, and then what happens afterwards? You experience growth and your heart gets healthier. And then when you go into the next one, you think, oh, okay, I was able to do this for XYZ amount of minutes. So the next session is a little bit easier to manage. Well, what does that look like in the spiritual life? Say you have a family member that you're struggling with and you don't want to talk to them, you know, or you argued or something. Okay, I know what God is calling me to do. I'm going to force myself, even though I don't feel like it, because I'm not led by my feelings. I'm led by my intellect and will. And I'm going to go engage with them. And I'm going to say, hey, you know we just had this fight or whatever. I really care about you. I want you to know it's not going to affect anything, blah, blah, blah. We can deal with it at another time. The more you do those things, and that's just one scenario out of hundreds of thousands of scenarios, the easier it becomes to face adversity in your life in any way, shape, or form. So whether it's physiological, psychological, or even spiritual, it all melds. It all helps build on one another.
U.S. government debt has grown a whopping $1 trillion in the last 3 months. Meanwhile, our economy only grew by $5.5 trillion in the last 3 years. The fiscal emergency has gotten so bad that even Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell has called the situation urgent. And that's why it's so important to shelter our assets right now. It's not too late to diversify into gold. Physical gold was used to preserve wealth throughout history, and now is a great time to include it in your saving strategy. Birch Gold Group makes the process straightforward. They can help you convert an existing IRA or a 401k into a tax-advantaged physical gold IRA without any out-of-pocket costs. With an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, countless of five-star reviews, and thousands of happy customers, Birch Gold is the nation's number one gold IRA provider. Just text HOPE to 989898 to receive their free info kit on gold IRAs and protect your savings today. Today's podcast is brought to you by a truly unique destination in the heart of New York City, the Leo House. Beyond the confines of a traditional hotel, the Leo House beckons as an enchanting oasis, seamlessly blending American history, Catholic spirituality, and a level of hospitality you won't find anywhere else. Whether you're a seasoned traveler in search of an unparalleled experience or a local yearning for a unique getaway within the city, the Leo House promises an extraordinary escape from the average and the ordinary. What sets the Leo House apart is not just its fascinating history, but the unique opportunity it offers all of its guests, regardless of their religious affiliation or their background, including a chance to attend Mass and confession right inside the hotel. This is pretty amazing. For more details to embark on an extraordinary stay, contact the Leo House at 212-929-1010 or click on the link above or below in the description.
So I wanted to talk about how we can maybe reconcile or dissect what's going on within the world and the modern tendency to avoid suffering with the Catholic understanding of suffering as a path to spiritual maturity. I definitely think, like we were talking about exercising, and so the secular man or woman can definitely understand that, like, oh, like if I do the harder thing in my workout, then that's obviously going to benefit me in the long term, because science, right? But I mean, what do you think is missing from the secular world's viewpoint of doing the harder thing or taking on suffering or even bearing responsibility? Obviously there's a lot of stuff out there, like Stoic culture is a big thing on that, at least my algorithm sometimes feeds me on social media. What do you think is missing from all that?
I think it's a lack of understanding in terms of the outcome, which I probably didn't articulate that well, but what I mean is, we live in a culture that says, I'm going to do what's easiest for me now. I'm going to avoid the difficult thing. I mean, everything is streamlined, right? We don't even have, like, drive-throughs were a huge invention. You don't have to go into the store. Well, now you don't even have to do that. You can order it, you know, on your phone. You can have someone deliver it to you, you know. So it's permeated every aspect of our culture. And why is that? Okay, well, I could do something else, which is this false. Sometimes it's true, right? I'm not saying that that's all bad, but it's this. It often becomes this false idea of like, well, my time is better spent elsewhere, right? But apply that same logic to like a relationship. In our society, you're having struggle in your relationship, just leave them. Go find somebody else. You know what I mean? Like, why would you suffer through that? And so many people say that to people. I've heard it. I get messages all the time. You know, my friends are telling me, why are you dealing with this? Why just go just leave. Even good Catholic people are dealing with this, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
But the reality is, barring extreme examples of like abuse or violence or things like that, that need to be addressed in a different way, the vast majority just need to push through and fight for their marriage because they entered a sacramental marriage. It's a covenant. And what happens is when these couples, because I've seen it 100 times, more than that, when these couples fight through and they overcome whatever issues that they're having, which are always temporal, they're always, you know, in a brief moment of time, if you look at the span of things, their marriage is so much better. Their kids are better. Their communities become better. Because it's like I mentioned earlier, as soon as you start figuring these things out and you gain these experiences, it's not just for you. You know what I mean? It's for your spouse. It's for your kids. It's for your loved ones. It's for your family. It's for your neighbors. It expands and you have this beautiful, virtuous ripple effect that goes through your, you know, your circle of people. So,
yeah. It reminds me of the C.S. Lewis analogy of the ships on water. So like the opposite of doing good for your marriage, which like you said, expands out to the community and the state and the country and the world, and perhaps even the universe to a metaphysical degree.
Sure.
The opposite end of the spectrum would be, you know, the Lewis's analogy of the ships, the fleet of ships, and that if each of the ships, you know, they agreed not to crash into one another, right? We're not going to crash into one another. But they're not taking care. Let's say each of the ship's crew is not taking care of their internal workings, right? And so the analogy to the human condition is our habits, our character, our virtue, as you were saying. Then whether they like it or not, whether they're intending to or not, they're going to crash into another ship if the rudder breaks, right? So it goes both ways. If we're not taking care of our self in terms of virtue, even if we're not intending to harm another person, that's just the reality of sin, is that it has that ripple effect. And same for what you said about marriage and how really it is to a certain degree the bedrock of society to the point that absolutely. You explain. So last question about sort of this this idea of suffering and redemptive suffering. I think it can be tempting for a godless society or even a Catholic that's experiencing some spiritual warfare, as we all do, to point the finger at Orthodox Christianity and accuse it of being masochistic, you know? So how can we balance that, in doing the harder thing in your point of view? Like, how can we, balance accepting, as you were saying, the suffering and the hardships on a personal level, while also being mindful to, take care of our minds and bodies, especially even in light of like something like fasting, right?
Right. Yeah. You know, that life of ascesis or those aspects of mortification are really important because that's primarily where virtue is gained, right? In the denial of mortification is simply just denial of self. Ascesis is denial of self. But why is that? Because we live in as you said, a fallen godless society, which is becoming truer by the day, unfortunately. And we have a fallen nature. And so what happens is if we do not buffet ourselves, that's the term used by a lot of fathers of the church and saints. If we do not buffet ourselves, meaning we do not take the time to make sure that our, what's the word? It's our our tastes, I don't remember the exact word they use, but the things that we desire, if we don't make sure that those things are in check, then it's just going to run wild. And if everyone really questions themselves about that, and they're really honest with themselves, they would know that to be the case. We all want to sleep in. We all, you know, not everyone enjoys alcohol, but a lot of people do, and sometimes too much. We want to, you know, sit and relax. And if we do that, what happens? We become sedentary. There's alcoholism. There's, you know, you're going to miss work. You're going to miss out on all the things that you are required to do as, you know, even a single person, let alone married and parents, right? So it's not this like, oh, we're seeking to, I'm not going out and lashing myself behind
the shirt.
Right. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But I am saying, all right, God, you've given me responsibilities. You've given me something to take care of, or several things to take care of, whatever that may look like. And in order to honor you, I know that I am weak. And in order to become strong, to fulfill the task that you've set in front of me, I have to do difficult things, whether that's up at 4 a.m. so I know that I have time to pray before I do all my work stuff, or I'm just maintaining my health, like we were talking about earlier, so that I can be around for my daughter and my grandkids, and then, you know, God willing, grandkids.
Yeah.
And then down the line. So that's kind of how I approach that.
Yeah, 100%. Kind of reminds me of another Frankl quote. I think it was in the same book, Man's Search for Meaning. It's not about what you expect from life, but it's about what life expects from you. And as Christians and Catholics, we can turn that into, it's not about what we expect from God, but it's about what God expects from us.
I like that.
Yeah. Which I think also puts into a better perspective the quote from Dostoevsky, you know? What does God expect from us? Because ultimately, like, he doesn't need anything. There's nothing lacking in God. So his will to create us, for us to praise him, is essentially, it's good for us. So,
right.
So, okay, I want to move on to spiritual warfare, because I think you specialize in that. You've read a lot about it. How does spiritual warfare interact with our ability or inability and our willingness or unwillingness to do the harder thing?
Yeah, so there's, as with everything, several aspects to that, right? it's a difficult part of our faith, but a beautiful part of our faith, that there's so much nuance to all these things. So one place that I would start with is that there is the commonly held belief, I think this goes back to Aquinas, is that you receive a guardian angel at the moment of your conception, right? Now, there's also a commonly held belief by various theologians and exorcists that you are assigned a demon at that same moment. It makes sense, because if you look at the way that the enemy works, I'm actually working on several series, but one of the series is showing how the enemy mocks everything holy.
Oh, wow.
So if you'll start seeing, it's like, because the devil, this is a, I think, I forgot whose quote this is from, but the devil doesn't have his own clay. He can only twist what has already been made,
yep,
right?
Absolutely, yeah.
So a lot of it is a mockery. So all that to be said, it makes sense that he would assign a demon to us. And what does that mean? That means that you have a highly intellectual being following you from every moment of your life, seeing everything, your entire life. They know your weaknesses. They know your desires. They know what you can fall to. They know how to irritate you. They know all these things. So that doesn't mean that every irritant or slip up or sin or fall or whatever comes from the enemy, but it can.
Okay.
It's both and.
Yeah.
I don't want anyone to ever think that the enemy is under, you know, the devil's under every rock, because that's not the case. But there is still a reality to know that, okay, there's someone, like I have in my morning prayers, I'll say this. I don't remember how I came to this, but it basically, I have some of these quotes before I get into morning prayers, like, you know, a priest said something to me that really stuck with me, or a nun said something to me recently at Congress that really stuck with me. And one of them is, the enemy wants you back, and he is putting traps to make sure that you fail, something along those lines. So I have this constant understanding of, ooh, okay, awareness, right? Awareness, not paranoia, but awareness that there are going to be times where the enemy is going to try to do something to make me act in a particular way. And if you can walk that line between awareness and paranoia, because paranoia is not healthy, but being aware of the fact that, okay, there is someone out to get me and there's someone who wants to, which sounds paranoid, but anyway, but who wants to, well, we know it from scripture.
At least we can't see them. Yeah, you know, the mercy of God, we don't see them, you know?
Well, you know, the devil prowls about like a roaring lion seeking for souls to devour. This is scripture, right? So we're not afraid, but we know. And if I know, then I can better handle situations as they come up. You know, I'm more aware of my internal movements and my feelings and checking myself. If I have a frustrating situation, I can say, oh, okay, how am I going to respond to this? Is my anger peaking? Why is my anger peaking? That's kind of silly. You know what I mean? So it's deeper awareness so you can navigate those instances. I may have gone a little off topic of your question, but.
No, not at all. No, I mean, that's the uniqueness of our humanity is that we can sort of, is the ability of self-awareness and tapping into that rather than not being aware of it and giving into our animal tendencies and essentially living like a determined being, you know, like we got to realize we have free will. And the first step to accept, to realizing that is perhaps accepting it. Which I think it was William James who said that, but then acting on it and being self-aware. I think we were emailing a little bit about the Screwtape Letters, which I read a while back, but you did a great piece, that was inspired by the Screwtape in the essence of the Screwtape Letters that on your Instagram that I definitely encourage our audience to check out. If you haven't seen it already, that's just like a great book for developing that self-awareness within the spiritual realm.
It's so brilliant. It's so brilliant. And it's probably one of my favorite books. It's one that if people ask me like, hey, what's a top five list? It's always in that list. And it's the biggest series that I'm working on now is going line by line through the Screwtape Letters and applying it to Catholic theology and saying, this is directly in line. This is, you know, like this is what this looks like in practical. And it's taken forever because there's, you should see the highlights in the book. It's almost every page is completely highlighted because Lewis was so brilliant that every line has an incredible depth to it. I couldn't agree more. Good. It's looking at it through that lens helps us kind of break through the various blindings, and it's not a bad thing. It's just, we get so used to certain things that we can't perceive realities. And that was such a brilliant way to present a reality to us that we really, really need to know.
Yeah, I think that's what spiritual reading does. I think it's what it's meant to do and what it's meant to foster is it's meant to change your perspective, to refresh your perspective, because that's what conversion is. At least someone has said it before, is that conversion is just essentially a change of perspective. Maybe it's not just that. There's obviously divine intervention there, especially if we're baptized, right? With the gifts of faith, hope, and love. But you mentioned you're highlighting in the book. I'm curious as to how you read. I want to ask you about that because because you're a writer too. And so like, I want to know how you gather ideas. So but before you answer, and I wonder if you've heard this before. I heard Fulton Sheen say on a recording one time, his go-to way of reading. It might've been in his Life is Worth Living series. I can't remember, but I have it in a journal. He definitely said it. He reads a book three times. He recommends reading a book three times. The first time, read it really fast. Speed read and underline as you go everything you think is important. Go back the second time, read your underlines, and then the third time, create an index in the back of the book, like a custom index. And I thought that was really cool. What do you think about that? And how do you read so as to sort of retain information and use it for your writing?
I like that a lot. It's funny. I do something a little similar, and I didn't know that he did that. I primarily. Now you should see, I don't know if I can even grab the stack of books and show you, but there's a stack that's like this high sitting right here, among other stacks around here.
Yeah.
But when I really want to dive into a text and really kind of chew on it, I have something called a Supernote. It's like the Remarkable tablet, if you've seen those. But it doesn't connect to the internet or anything. So I pull up Kindle books, and I prefer physical books. But what this allows me to do is highlight, and then it opens up, and I can write on this tablet, and I can write notes that are linked to that thing. So
AB, is that what you have? Supernote? He's got the Remarkable too.
Oh, okay.
So yeah. you pull up the books on this?
Yeah. So I pull up the books, and I can highlight a line, and then I can write out. And because I really value the physical writing out of things, I'm very ADHD. And so anything that I can do to physically write something out helps me retain the knowledge a little bit more, or to think about something a little bit more.
100%. But so, I bet the search, you got a search feature on that thing?
Yes. And I can pull up the index cards and things like that. And I can go back and...
Can you search what you've written?
You know, I don't know. I haven't tried that. Okay. I would be surprised if that wasn't a feature. It just, again, like I love my physical stack. Obviously, I like books, but that just streamlines the process for different projects. And then it's really nice because it's tiny and, you know, I have ideas during mass or something. I can just break it out and write it down real quick and put it away. So it's just a nice tool to use in the midst of that. But a lot of it is, you know, I've read and reread and listened to even the Screwtape Letters probably over 100 times.
Wow.
And in the midst of, and that's no exaggeration.
Yeah.
In the midst of that, you start to, you're like, okay, I know it's coming next. So, okay, I'm starting to make connections, you know, with something. It's a little bit difficult to explain, but I feel like maybe that's what Fulton Sheen was doing. It's like, okay, yeah, no, I know it, but this allows me to go deeper within the text, and I can kind of discover things that I wouldn't have discovered if I just read it once and left it.
Yeah, especially in the context of what you're experiencing in life. It's the same thing with scripture, right? Like we hear the same passage, you know, 3 years later. Three or 4 years later? And after the rotation.
Yeah, no, that's a great way to describe it. That's exactly what happens. You know, you heard that gospel 100 times, and then, you know, the 102nd time, you're like, oh, wait a minute, I never thought about it this way.
It hits you completely differently. Yeah, especially as you progress in life, your responsibilities change. Like, you know, perhaps you have children, but perhaps you've given your vows for the religious life. So last question for you. Jordan, this has been awesome, man. A really great hang.
Yeah, thank you. This is great.
Oh, yeah. And I really appreciate your time. You had a post that you've pinned on your Instagram of all the spiritual books that it was kind of like you're sort of reading. Yeah, you're reading for spiritual warfare specifically. So I think the post was like a guide to understanding and engaging in spiritual warfare. So maybe
reading plan or something like that.
Yeah, reading plan. Could you just touch on a few of your favorite books other than Screwtape Letters?
Yeah. So, well, and I made that because there's a lot of people who want to learn, but they don't, I'll say this, in this kind of arena, there's a serious issue with curiositas, which is a disordered curiosity. So people will be fascinated with this, but for the wrong reasons, basically. Want something that's like salacious or, you know, shocking, and like going to watch a horror movie. But because this is so real and important, I saw the need to say, okay, if you do want to start learning this, which I believe everyone should, here is where I would start. And it simply starts with scripture to the catechisms and then to more modern texts. So you're building a solid foundation through scripture and church teaching, and then you can kind of step into to more and more as time goes on. You know, I'm looking, so I have half of that stack here. Anything Father Morth, I think, is great. He's such an interesting personality. Adam Bly is phenomenal. But Dominion, I think Dominion was, and I need to update that list, but Dominion was the very last one. And that one is because it is so... I call it the Summa of spiritual warfare for our time.
Wow.
I don't think he would call it that, but there's nothing like it ever written. The closest thing that I can think of is On Evil from Aquinas, but that still doesn't cover a lot of what Father Ripper covers in Dominion. So
what a cool title, too.
Dominion. Oh, yeah. Yeah. So that's the last one, but because it is so rich and dense, and I mean, he even says in the book, if you haven't read Introduction to the Science of Mental Health, which I have somewhere behind me, which is like this thick, you need to start there. So it's like, all right, let's build people up to it. So I don't know. It's hard to give you an exact like top five in spiritual warfare. I think if you just wanted to jump in and you wanted some brief explanations and to stop there, anything by Charles Frond, Slaying Dragons, is phenomenal. And I really respect, he's one of the best researchers out there, in my opinion. So there's a lot of good stuff.
Yeah. I mean, speaking of, looking into these things for the wrong reasons, it reminds me of why, I find spiritual warfare writings interesting, or even just, I love listening to certain exorcists like a Father Carlos Martins or Father Vincent Lampert. Even Monsignor Rossetti, these guys that are doing their podcasts on social media, fantastic. And the reason I find them fascinating, and I'll tell people about them, be like, you gotta listen to this. And it might be a person of, let's say it's a person who's disconnected from the faith, or even not even a Catholic. They're like, ooh, that sounds really scary. Like, I don't even know if I can deal with just listening to it and their experiences during exorcisms. But I've always found it to like really solidify my faith, at least within the moment, like rather reinforce my faith. And it's really prompted me to get even more serious after listening to that episode or reading the part on spiritual warfare about prayer and devotion, because you listen to these guys and they're just so convicted because of what they've seen. But they're so poised, like so poised and just rock solid, and the confidence and the peace and the faith that they evoke is just, it's inexplicable, man. It's so.
And that's the goal. I mean, because you have, I mentioned the people who go into it with a disordered curiosity, but on the other end of that scale, you have people who are afraid. And I want to say to folks, it's like, who do you believe God is? You know, when I describe demons as mosquitoes, you know they're around. You can
my wife would like
them.
That one.
Yeah, I get bit up a lot too, so that's one of the reasons. But you take precautions so you don't get bit. You recognize that some mosquitoes carry diseases, so you take it seriously. But you can swat them away, and because of God, So it's like there's no reason to fear. So that what you described is beautiful, because that in my mind is the proper place to be, where it's like, okay, this, I am A, more aware, B, more thankful for my faith, and C, more determined to live out my faith in a particular way. That's amazing.
Amen, man. Amen. Well, I think that just about does it. I really appreciate your time, Jordan.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
This has been wonderful. And definitely to our audience, go check out Do the Harder Thing. I think it's do_the_harder_thing on Instagram. You have a podcast with your father, I think, right, Dan?
Yeah, we just released it. It's called The Devil's in the Details. It is talking, we basically saw a need where, as I've mentioned probably ad nauseum at this point, but all the nuance in these various topics, but especially in spiritual warfare. So we want to kind of demystify that and talk to the different experts and say, okay, what's the reality of this? Or, this expert and this expert disagree. Let's have a conversation. That's the goal. So you can find that out. It's all podcasting platforms, but that's where a lot of my energy is going now.
Nice. Good, good. Yeah. Again, to reiterate, go check out the Instagram, do_the_harder_thing. I love some of the stuff up there, especially that prayer spaces. What do you call those things?
Highlights, I think.
Highlights. Yeah.
Yeah.
The prayer spaces highlights, the laying of hands. That was a very interesting one. Very interesting.
We're going to have several episodes on that, because that's a very complicated topic.
Oh, yeah. I was literally, we got to cut this. But we were we had an in-house retreat yesterday. We got to cut this. We had a Franciscan friar of the Renewal here, who we love. But all of a sudden he was asking us to put your hand on the person next to your shoulder, right? It wasn't the head. So maybe the shoulder's okay, but all of a sudden I was getting scrupulous because I was like, I literally just watched something on Jordan's Instagram yesterday about laying on a hands, and am I about to have a bad experience? Yeah, is the shoulder okay? I mean,
so this is the beauty of the show we're going to do, is that if you read Father Amorth's writings, he says no, but there's also an argument to say, here's how I would say it based on everything that I've read. This is just my opinion that I'm still kind of formulating. If this is a work thing, you know these people, you spend a lot of time with them, you would be aware if something kind of weird was going on. And so if you knew something was weird or you suspected something was weird, I probably wouldn't do it. I'm still not comfortable with it, but it's more of a precaution. So when Father Morthy says, you don't know what they have, you don't know what's going on. And we know that things can be passed from one another. He said, so it's better not to do it. But we know as humans, we also know that, like, sometimes it's good to comfort somebody, put your hand on somebody's shoulder. You know what
absolutely.
I mean?
Yeah.
So that's the whole point of the show, is we're going to go into all that because it's so complicated.
Yeah. I'm definitely going to check that out. Cool. Maybe we can keep that in. I don't mind keeping it in. But let's close that. We'll see. Yeah, we'll see. Jordan, thanks again, brother, for being with us, and God bless you in your ministry and everybody who visits the retreat center in Alabama, and thanks again, brother.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was awesome.
Thanks so much for joining us for another episode of A Reason for Hope podcast. If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, you should download the Array of Hope app. We have tons of great Catholic family-friendly videos, movies, and series, all to help you grow deeper in your Catholic faith. Sign up for an account at the link above or below in the description, and download the app on your favorite device. Until next time, peace.